Darkwraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, academic lectures in business and economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 4 for Spring Semester 2015. Lecture 17, delivered on March 24, 2015. The title of this lecture is Marginal Cost of Capital.
Today, marginal cost of capital. This is a working class where I'm going to hand you out a worksheet. You are going to work through it with me to almost the end, and then you will complete it and fill in the numbers in a quiz, quiz 6, which is online. It'll show up right after class. You have until Thursday just before class to complete that quiz, and there is no makeup of that quiz. You get two shots at it like any quiz, but you got to get it done, and that's why it's crucial for you to take this worksheet and go through it. And there, I've also got a copy of this in resources and materials on ReggieNet. So, excuse me. You can use this one as a scratch sheet, and then if you need to fill it out again and work through some problems one more time, by all means, it'll be available to you, another one of these. But for right now, I'm going to hand this out, pass it around, take one, don't be greedy, and don't take one for a friend who isn't here in the class, because you're just enabling the people who don't want to come to class by doing that. Here's the backdrop of this. This comes under the large subject, capital budgeting. We have to decide what projects we are going to take on in a company. Usually there is a group or some system of a company that works on possible new projects. They find them, they estimate the costs of them, they estimate the future expected cash flows, and we come to some kind of a return on investment or some present value of future expected cash flows, and we say yes or no to projects. And you'll see that there are a couple of different standard techniques that have been around for a long time. One is net present value technique, another is internal rate of return. Marginal cost of capital is a little bit heavier duty one. And then there are some very new techniques that I can't even describe to you that are sort of kind of taking over in some companies, especially very large companies and young, aggressive, more tech-oriented companies. But what you're seeing here is the marginal cost of capital approach to capital budgeting, deciding what projects we're going to take on. Now, in this case, what we're going to do, as you see in the problem, and this is just sort of a standard problem, and it's a good problem that I would put on an exam, something like this. Hint, hint. Hello? Oh, I see. Let me mute that. Okay. And what we're going to do here is I'm going to walk you through this. So it can't be that hard, but I do make one comment on this. There is a place where you have to do some graphical representation. You have to do it really accurately. And when you draw a line, you have to use a straight edge. And I will know if you have just drawn a line, I can draw a line, because you probably get it wrong, the answer. Because in many cases, whether you say yes or no to a project is a matter of just a few thousand or $10,000. And if you don't draw this graph really carefully, you're not going to see whether or not which way the answer should go on yes or no. But that's down the line a little bit. Bear with me while I turn on the document camera and crank this thing up a little bit. Let me pull a marker from my pocket. I thought I had a short marker. Okay, good. Now, I'm going to put this up on the board here. Is that out of focus, or am I just having a stroke?
Okay, good, good, good. Focus. Focus. For heaven's sakes, can't it autofocus?
Well, oh, that's better. Let me back it up a little bit here. It's not auto-focusing for some reason. Give me a second here. Auto-focus. There. Oh, okay. You got to read the problem carefully. And as I said, with word problems, no matter whether it's in math classes or finance or economics or physics, get the numbers out of the word problem as fast as you can so that the words are not cluttering your decision-making needs. In this case, we have habitable places has a capital structure that's 35% debt and 65% common equity. In other words, this company has already determined that its optimal capital structure is 35% debt and 65% equity. We haven't made that decision. That was made by some gurus back somewhere they keep in a dark room in the company. The practical significance of that is that whenever we spend a dollar on a project, we don't just pull a dollar from the closest place. We pull that dollar in proportion to the capital structure of the company. So if you need a dollar, I'm going to give you 35 cents of it in debt from money that's borrowed, and I'm going to give you 65 cents of it in stockholders' equity, in income if we've got some earnings, and in new equity if we have to sell new stock to get it. But we don't just spend money. We spend it according to this capital structure that we have in place. Now, moving on here is that the managers consider this mix to be optimal and want to maintain it in the future. That's why we're going to be spending 35 cents of every dollar using debt funds and 65% using equity. That will keep our optimal capital structure. Net income for the year just ended is $1.2 million. Now, you've got to keep that in mind. In other words, this company is starting out with money in the bank, equity, of $1.2 million that it can use on new projects. But later on, we're going to see that it's not quite that much that they have. Anyway, Arturo Villas, the loan officer at the local bank, has set up the following schedule for Habitable Places borrowing. If the company borrows up to $250,000, they'll be getting an interest rate of 10%. But if they go above $250,000, the bank's going to say, oh, you're getting a little risky here, so we're going to pop your interest rate up a little bit to 12%. So there are two tiers of debt this company is going to be pursuing. So it's going to borrow what it can at 10%, and if it still needs money as debt for its projects, it'll just start paying 12%. Now, there are 40,000 shares of common stock outstanding. You got to keep that in mind, because the firm's tax rate is 40%. The market price per share of Habitable Places common stock is $50 a share. Here's the key. They have just declared and paid a $5 per share annual dividend that's expected to grow at 9%. So, in other words, their net income was $1.2 million. But they can't use all of that for new projects because they're going to give some of it back to their shareholders. So you've got to calculate, all right, X dividend, in other words, after the dividend is paid, what do they have left for projects? So can you tell me how much are they going to, what's the total amount they're going to pay in dividends? Can you tell me that just right off the top of your head? What are they going to pay in dividends? Dollar amount. How much? 40 times 5. Yeah. I had to calculate it myself there. Yeah, 200. So in other words, they had $1.2 million to plow back into the company, but they disgorged 200 grand of it back to their shareholders to make their shareholders happy. So they have $1.2 million minus 200,000. So we have to keep that in mind for a little bit later, is that this company has $1 million that it can reach into its bank account to use for new projects before it would have to sell stock for more equity funds. Moving along here. The flotation costs, if and when they start having to sell stock to raise equity funds, they got to float 8%. So in other words, their price of their stock was what? What was it? $50 a share. So if they sell, if the brokers sell their stock at $50 a share, the brokers are going to keep how many dollars of it? Four. So in other words, the ex float cost of the stock for what the company would actually get in a public offering isn't $50 a share. It's 50 minus $4 a share. Got to keep that in mind. Now, moving along, managers are considering several investment opportunities for the upcoming year. They have their senior financial analyst, Andrea Karas, to recommend which of the following projects the firm should undertake. You are the newest member of her team and need the experience. She has passed this management request along to you. Here are the projects that are possible. We call these the investment opportunities. And there will be something like this in most reputable companies. In every budget cycle, before it even begins, they will look in front of them and say, what could we do for this coming year as far as new projects go? And sometimes that budget cycle is actually longer. What could we do over the next 5 years or something like that? So in other words, every company is going to have an investment opportunities layout. Later, we're going to rank these from the best to the worst. And as you can see, if you look down the line, they're not in the order right now of best to worst. And any reputable company is going to go from its best to its worst. The first thing it's going to do is try to fund the most prospective project. If it gets through that one, it will try to fund the next most prospective project, et cetera, down the line. In other words, it's just going to go straight on ROI or something like that, and we use ROI in these kinds of examples. Now comes the numbers. Just get them out of that problem as fast as you can and clean it up. It's basic math. Remember I told you that the cost of debt, KD after taxes, is the cost of debt before taxes times 1 minus the company's tax rate. Notice that there are two costs of debt here. There could be even more, as I told you. Sometimes there are 3, 4, 5 tiers of, well, maybe not that many, but there are, could be more than two. But here you have a cost of cheap debt after taxes and a cost of more expensive debt after taxes. You have to find that. Go ahead. When you can work together, just work through it. Ten percent times 1 minus 0.4 is 10% times 0.6, and that would be your cost of debt on the first tier. So what do you get for that? And no, this should not be. This is not calculus. What do you get? For God's sake, what do you get? No. Cost of debt on the first tier would be after taxes. Cost after taxes on the first level of debt would be 10%. See that right there? Times 1 minus the company's tax rate, which I told you was 40%. So it's 10% times 1 minus 0.4, which is 10% times 0.6. What's 10% times 0.6? 6%, yes, 0.06. We usually just write as a percent for now, but we will have to keep an eye on that to make sure we don't leave it as a percent if we have to do some real math with it. Now, you'll have to also do the cost after taxes, of debt on the second tier. What's the cost before taxes of debt on the second tier? What is it? Anyone got it anywhere in here?
7.2%.
Well, I wanted the first thing is to tell me the 12% times 1 minus the 0.40. We're starting off kind of worrying here, which does indeed come out to be 7.2%. Those are the two after-tax costs of debt. Those are cheap money. That's cheap money for the company. But remember that every dollar it spends, it's going to use only 35 cents of that from its debt. So we have to now go on and find the cost of equity. And if you remember the formula for the cost of equity, the cost of existing shareholders, the people who are already in your you're already taking care of as your owners, is the dividend 1 period out over the price of the stock now plus the growth rate of dividends. D1 over P0, and then that ratio plus the G. And you have to do this all as decimals. You have to do it by straight up math. What was the dividend the company just paid? What was D0 for this company? D0 was $5 per share. The problem is that the formula asks for D1. Don't ever use D0 because everything from there in the problem you'll get wrong, straight up. So you have to grow this period, this dividend 1 period. The dividend 1 period out is going to be the dividend now, just paid, times 1 plus the growth rate of the dividends. D1 is D0 times the quantity 1 plus G. So it's just straight arithmetic. This is sixth grade stuff. Talk to me. What do you get for your answer for D1? Five what? $5.45 you should get. Because you are going to take $5 per share times 1 plus 0.09. So in other words, the formula breaks down to K sub S is $5.45 per share. What was the current price of the stock? $50 per share. Plus the growth rate of 0.09. Don't ever forget to add that growth rate there at the end of it. You should get a percentage, a decimal, and it should be something that is large, relatively large, compared to the cost of debt. That's your guidelines to know you're doing it right. What do you get for the cost of existing shareholder equity? 0.199, four decimal places after the percentage. What do you want? You've got your cost of your existing shareholders. Notice that equity really is expensive as hell compared to debt. You see how even the most expensive debt is less than half the cost of having shareholders? Owners are expensive. And it gets even worse on the next step. I'm going to walk around here and make sure that you are doing this. Your new shareholders are going to be calculated, the cost of new shareholders, if you have to sell more stock to keep equity dollars flowing, would be D1 over the price, current price, minus the float, and then all of that plus G. So that denominator isn't going to be 50 anymore. It's going to be 50 minus. What was it? What was the float we found? $4. So it'll be 46 in the denominator, which is going to make this cost of new shareholders just absolutely knocked dead.
I'm going to turn on my...
It depends on what they're selling. If they're going for selling debt, it's virtually nothing. Preferred stock is very small. But a float for a normal company, theoretically, and I can't tell you this for real, for sure, but there are supposedly rules that limit how high the float can be. But then they tack on all of these extras like lawyer fees, accountant fees, fees for travel, meals and entertainment. I don't know. And it can actually end up just being a lot of the price. The company thinks, well, I'm going to get $50 a share. By the time the brokers have taken, the underwriting syndicate has taken out their cut, you might see $42, $43 a share by the time it's all over, which means that selling new stock makes for extraordinarily expensive capital. What do you get when you do this? When you calculate this one down here?
20.85.
What is it?
20.85.
20.85? I thought it was a little higher than that, but I'm not, my calculator is dead right now. Okay. Nevertheless, see what's happened here. Is that right? Is that what you got? 20.85? Okay. Okay. But see what's happening here is that as the company uses more and more money to do projects, the cost of the last dollar they use, the marginal cost of capital, is getting worse and worse. So in other words, their investment opportunities are falling in ROI as their marginal cost of capital is rising. That's going to tell us there's a point where we stop taking on these projects because the projects are no longer able to pay for themselves in terms of the financing that we use. Now we do something called breakpoints. Breakpoints are the places where we have to switch the capital resource. Your first breakpoint is going to be a debt breakpoint. Where do we end up having to the bank say 12%, no more 10%, 12%? So what we do is we do a sort of a backward calculation here. Look, you see this company, see that $250,000? Okay, every dollar that we're going to spend on projects, 35% of it is going to be debt. So we're going to say, all right, we're going to blow $250,000 when the total expenditures have exceeded 35% of the breakpoint. In other words, there's some total amount of money we have spent where 35% of that is going to hit $250,000. You're going to keep asking me for money, and I'm going to keep pulling borrowed money from the bank and money from the equity funds that I have. There's going to be some amount of money where I don't have any more of that cheapo debt. I'm going to have to go back to the bank and say, we have to borrow high at the higher rate. That's what I'm doing with this little formula right here. Is I'm saying I have run through $250,000 when 35% of the total that I have run through is that much. You just rearrange it then and you say $250,000 over 0.35 is your first break point. That's the point where we are now borrowing expensive money. That's a break point. What do you get for that? What do you get for that number? It's $714,285. And you don't have to give any pennies, because it's going to be, I mean, we're going to do this graphically, and graphing pennies is going to be really tough on this. Oh, okay, 286. Okay, so now we're proceeding. Okay, we're still doing projects here. We're still doing projects. We're still spending money. We've gone through $714,000, and we're still spending. We'll still keep spending, but now we're going to be borrowing at a higher rate. But we've still got money in the bank that we earned. Our earnings, we still got some money. And we're using 65% of that. But the problem here is that now we come to the next break point where we run out of money in the bank that we earned. And then we're going to have to go and sell stock if we want more equity money. There is going to be a place. How much money does this company have in the bank? $1 million. Do you remember that? What they earned minus what they gave to their shareholders. You see, that's a real issue, too, is that you gave that to the shareholders, you don't have it to plow back. So now, instead of $1.2 million, they have only $1 million. And in terms of projects that they are spending money on, that $1 million was 65% of the second breakpoint. That second breakpoint is where they have to sell stock to keep getting equity funds for projects. The capital structure, right there.
Oh, okay, my bad.
Yeah. Whoops. Yeah. Every dollar that they were spending, 35% was debt from debt funds, 65% was from equity. Well, they burned through their cheap debt at $700,000 when they had total project expenditures of $714,000. But then they burned through the money that they had earned at a higher level. What was the number that comes out here? $162,000. So there you go. No, I want you to. I zoomed it in so far. Now let me show you what it means. Money spent. Well, I was just drawing it. I'll let you see me draw it if you want. Okay. At $714,286 in total project expenditures, $250,000 of that would have been debt, 35%. In other words, 35% of $714,286 was debt. And that's why we then ran out of cheap debt, and if we keep going upward, we're going to pay the more expensive debt from then on. But then the next problem comes when we have gotten to total expenditures, this is not to scale, of $1,538,462. Because it's at that point, that we have run through all of the money we had in the bank. The equity at that point, 65% of what we spent is $1 million. Then we have to go out and sell stock. See breakpoint 3 there? You don't need it for this problem because there were only two tiers of debt and they had one source of equity, common stock, internally generated and selling new stock. So there will be no third breakpoint, but there could be more than two breakpoints. Later in this problem, you are going to have to graph all of these numbers right here, and these numbers come into play too. You have to do it so carefully, or you will not see where to stop funding new projects. From here, it's actually technically easy. Because we are going to be calculating marginal cost of capital. We're going to have marginal cost of capital 1, marginal cost of capital 2, and marginal cost of capital 3. And whenever you calculate one of these, all you're going to do is take the weight of the debt in your capital structure times the cost of debt plus the weight of equity in your capital structure times the cost of the equity. You keep this in mind. Cheap debt, cheap equity. Expensive debt, cheap equity. Expensive debt, expensive equity. That's how you do the marginal cost of capital. MCC 1, which by the way, is the weighted average cost of capital. Marginal cost of capital 1 is your weighted average cost of capital I've mentioned before. But MCC 1 is cheap debt, cheap equity. So what's the weight of cheap debt in our capital structure? Can you tell me that? What's its weight first? 35%. What was the cost of it, did you say? 6%. What's the weight of equity? Talk to me. What's the weight of equity? The weight of equity, 65%. So plus 0.65. What's the cost of our cheap equity? What's the cost of the cheap equity? You see it? That's why we did these. That's why we did these. So we could bring it down to the MCCs. 19.90%. And you calculate that MCC 1. As always, 2 decimals after the percentage is formed. Never anything else. So what do you get for the first weighted average cost of for the MCC 1, which is the weighted average cost of capital? What do you get for that? 13.04? 15.04? Going once, going twice. What do you get? 15.04. Now, the net, we did cheap debt, cheap equity. Now we've blown our cheap debt. We've still got cheap equity. We've still got money in the bank from earnings, but we've got expensive debt. So it's 35 for MCC 2. It's 35% times what? What is it? How about 7.2? You don't need to do these as percentage as decimals. Weights, you have to do those as decimals. So what number do I put in here for the equity? What is it? The same. Because we've still got money in the bank that we earn. So our cost of equity is still the cheap stuff. What was that? So you got 0.35 times 7.2 plus 0.65 times 19.90. Survey says... What do you get? You sure don't. What is it? 18.46. 15.46. Notice that your last dollar is now more expensive because your debt popped. Fortunately, notice that your marginal cost of capital didn't go up horribly, but it did nudge up because you're now using more expensive money. Go.
Why'd you use 19.9%?
Because we're using the money that we are in earnings. We haven't sold any new stock because we've still got some of that $1 million left to mix with the debt. Yeah. You had a question? Because what would happen is that you're always using the debt and the equity in combination. Now, we saw that first break point. What was the first break point?
714-286.
Yeah, okay, 714-286. So in other words, we have total project expenses at this point of $714. And $250,000 of that was debt. So we've really spent only about, $460,000 of that money in the bank. Do you see that? So in other words, I had $1 million in bank. I still got some of that $1 million left. Okay, because up to the point where I hit my first break point, which was right here, I mean, $714,000, only $250,000 of that was money I'd borrowed. So this part in here, which is about $460,000, I don't know what it is from that million that I've got. So I've still got plenty of money. After I start borrowing more expensive debt, my marginal cost of capital is now being shaped by expensive debt, but I've still got some of that money in the bank that was the cheaper equity. I haven't had to sell new stock yet. That's why I'm doing that. This is a good question, though. Very good question. Finally, though, at one point, about $1,500,000, that break point two, certainly the bank's charging me more, and I have blown my $1 million in the bank. So that's when I have to call the underwriter and say, sell stock now, because we need to keep going with projects. And that means that on the third tier of the marginal cost of capital, 35% is going to be cheap or expensive debt, and 65% is going to be that head-banging expensive equity. What was the cost of new equity? 20.85%. So the last tier of marginal cost of capital, when we are borrowing expensive money, when we are bringing in expensive new owners, where does that come out to be? Notice how you got a more serious punch upward on the marginal cost of capital. Go.
For the cost of debt and equity, you want to value
in percentages, yes.
You want the
I want rounded, always round to two decimal places. Yeah, do that. And the reason they do that is just because old school, we would just use the rounded numbers. That's just the way we did it back before we had fancy calculators. Save ourselves having to multiply too many numbers. Yeah, just use the two decimal places. His question was this. Look, these numbers were actually larger, had more decimal places than just 20.85%. Is it okay to just use the 20.85%? Yes. That's just old school. We don't even try to keep carrying on all those decimals along in these. Okay, now, we're almost to the end here. The investment opportunity schedule, all you do is rearrange the projects from the best to the worst. You go back to your investment opportunities, and then you rewrite those from the highest ROI to the lowest ROI. In other words, from the first one we would jump on to the last one we would consider if we still have the money to do it. You just rearrange them. and use the names of them. On an exam, I will ask you to give me a complete sentence answer. What projects will we take on? So that means that you are going to want to keep the names along with the expenditures and everything else. Now talk to me. What is the first project I'm going to list on the IOS on the second page, the Investment Opportunity Schedule? What's the first project I'll list? Kansas City. The Kansas City Sheltered Families is a $1.5 million beast, but it turns up 18% return on investment. So if we're going to start, we're going to start with the Kansas City Shuffle. If anyone ever saw the movie. And I'm going to write them out summarily right here. Kansas City. Initial investment, $1,500,000. And its ROI is 18%. That's how you do the investment opportunity schedule. From the best project to the worst project, carrying along the cost of each project. What's the next one? If we are able to fund all of Now you notice something. I want you to notice something before we even go any further, though. What's the worst cost of capital that we will hit? What's the worst cost of capital you see there? Right off the bat, you don't even have to do any calculations. Are we going to take on Kansas City Sheltered Families? Absolutely, because it's going to turn in 18. The worst that we'll ever pay for capital is 16, just a little over 16%. Kansas City Sheltered Families comes in, it never goes below 18%. So now that's a winner. We don't even have to think about that one. That's a no-brainer. However, things get a little trickier as we spend money on some of these other projects. What's the next best one we can, if after we get through Kansas City, what's the next one we'll take on? Cedar Rapids. How much does Cedar Rapids cost us? How much? That's a $500,000 project. And what does it turn in as ROI? Okay. That is a little bit sweat. Because if we have spent so much money by the time we get to Cedar Rapids that we're at our highest marginal cost of capital, we wouldn't take that project on because the marginal cost of capital is a little more. But we don't know that we're going to be using the most expensive money. That's where the next step will come in. So here's where we might take it on, we might not take it on. What comes next? If we get through Cedar Rapids, what comes next? Wichita. How much is that one going to cost? And what's its return? 15? It's 15? Okay, good. Love it. Yeah, that's a $600,000 project. See it? And then finally, you notice that it's clear that if we are spent too much money on the first projects, we're probably not going to make it to Wichita, but we don't know yet. And the last one that we could possibly take on would be which one? East St. Louis. How much is that project? It's a heavy. And what does it return? Ouch. Ouch. You can see right now we're never going to take on East St. Louis. Because even when we start spending money, The very cheapest money that we take on, we use, is 15% money. Is it? Is about 15? Yeah, about 50, just a little over 15%. So East St. Louis, we're just going to not even bother to drive down there, even if there is a White Castle right on the way. It's out. So you see, in a way, you're kind of using a combination of math and just what's obvious. Obviously, we are going to take on Kansas City. We never have to use money that's as expensive as what Kansas City is going to give us. And we're obviously never going to East St. Louis because its ROI is below the cheapest money that we could ever use at 15.04%. So the question is right there in the middle. Those two projects there in the middle, the Cedar Rapids and the Wichita, don't know yet. But that's where we come to the last part of this problem. We are going to graph the marginal cost of capital and the investment opportunity schedule on the same graph. Now, here is where you have to use a straight edge. Excuse me. I think about White Castles, and I get all excited. Okay. Scale is really important here. Whenever you're doing a scale for one of these, and I'll give you a practice problem next week, I'll let you practice on one. Think about and this goes back to your early learning how to graph and math. The capital budget, you see that we are going to probably, the worst that we could spend would be $500,000, and $1 million, $1.5 million, $2.1 million, 3.1, 3.6 million. So we need to get as far as probably $4 million on the x-axis. And it looks like probably the best thing that we could do here, as far as tick marks go, what would you say? If we need to go from zero up to 4 million, what would probably be the best scale that we would use on that axis? That's my assumption. I always start with 500,000. And that notice that that's going to make graphing those budget numbers a little bit tricky, but 500K, and then 1 million, and then 1.5 million, 2 million. And you could choose your own, but this is probably about as good as you can do. 2.5 million, 3 million, 3.5 million. And 4 million. About as good as we're going to get for the scale. You don't want the scale so wide that you can't see a detail of a number, but you don't want it so narrow that you're not going to get to the highest budget. I want you to make sure you see that 4 million, it's 3.6 million, is the total that we could possibly spend this year on projects. You saw that, right? If we took on all the projects, we would spend south of $4 million, 3.6 or something like that. That's why you want to make the scale so that you can get up to the very worst scenario. Now, the other axis is percentages. And usually you do 1%. And, man, that makes it tough, though, because you're going to have to graph things like 15.04, 15.56. On those kinds of axes. That's why sometimes I saw it with my own eyes, an Excel app that does this iOS MCC thing. And it does it perfectly, perfect scaling and everything. Old school. Step one, draw your breakpoints. We have a breakpoint at $714,000. Now, you're going to have to use a judgment. And it has got to be a straight line, perfectly perpendicular . That is breakpoint one right there. I actually probably drew that a little short there, but, you know, there you go. And then we're going to put in breakpoint 2, which was just a little north of 1,500,000. So at about 1,500,000, just a little bit north of 1.5 million, another perfectly straight line. And for God's sake, don't think your hands are so good that you can do this freehand. Just a little bit north of $1.5 million. That is breakpoint 2. There's a reason you're putting in the breakpoints. The breakpoints tell you where the marginal cost of capital jumps. Again, the breakpoints tell you where the marginal cost of capital jumps. So now, on this vertical axis, I'm going to do these by 1% increments. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5%, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10%, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15%, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20%. 1% is always a good place to start. I mean, it's going to be tough. You have to really do good eyeballing. And now we're ready. First things first. Get your marginal cost of capital in. The reason I drew the breakpoints is because they are where we jump in cost of capital. At $714,000, before $714,000, we had 14.04% capital. That was MCC1 right there. For $714,000, we're paying 15.04%. But then after $714,000, we're borrowing at a higher rate on the second marginal cost of capital. So our MCC jumps to just a little under 15.5%. Oh, my God. See, that's what pisses me off, is when you let me do something, you didn't do it right. I did that to show you how easy it is to make a mistake and why you should do these in pencil. Thank you. And I did even there make a little bit of a mistake. These lines should stop dead on the breakpoint. These are stepwise functions. You remember those from somewhere in your dark arithmetic past? They might have shown you stepwise functions. They are actually something that's kind of common in business and in certain types of physics and chemistry. There are these thresholds. You hold at 15.04%. For $714,000. And then the bank says, you got to pay us more now because you've gone past $250,000 in borrowings. Okay, we pop. And then one last time, when we have gone past the second breakpoint, we are now paying 16.07%. And then that's the price we pay forever after that. God, that just irritates the hell out of me that I did that. Anyway, that is the MCC function. Yes?
Okay, I didn't do a simple example, but if you like continually sell stocks when the cost of capital go up.
No. No. Yeah, because once you start selling, your float will stay the same. Now, actually, the price might begin to fall on you in a realistic situation. We might want to keep that in mind, but we're going to pretend that doesn't happen. Okay? Now, The last thing you're going to do, you know what you're going to do last? You're going to put in your investment opportunity schedule. The first project is going to be the Kansas City. You know what? I am so, what did I hit? There. Is that better? Are you happy? Sorry. Gee whiz. What the hell? You know? Okay. Okay. Kansas City. $15 million, $1.5 million. We'll spend $1.5 million exactly, not quite to that break point, at an 18% return. Then we would spend $600,000 more than that, which would take us up to $2.1 million, and we would get 16%. So in other words, from where this one ends, we would spend $600,000 more to get to $2.1 million total expenditures. I want you to tell me something right now. No, I'm not. Jesus. I'm so damn sick of this shit. That's right. What the heck is wrong with me today? It's like I say, just kill yourself before you get to my age. You'll save embarrassment for your kids. You got your MCCs going up like this. And then you got your IOSs going down like this. Screw this. Do it again real quick here because I want you. And now I can't even find my stupid pen. Ah. Be still, boy. I'm on it. Okay, your break points. You had one break point right here at 714. That was your one break point. Then your next one was just a little above 1.5 million. Okay, and then you had your marginal cost of capital. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. Your first MCC was 1.05%, or 15.04%, I'm sorry. And then you had your next one, which was 15.46%. And then you had your last one, which was just a little north of 16%. Permanently. Now you have your investment opportunity schedule. Sorry about that. Now your first IOS, you were absolutely right. I went at 18%, I spent $1.5 million and that earned me 18%. Just a little below that break point. Now I got through Kansas City, or was it Cedar Rapids? Yeah, okay. Excuse me, it was Kansas City. And now I can spend $600,000 more, which would be a total of about $2.1 million, out to about there. I want you to tell me something right now. Looking at the graph, obviously it's Kansas City. Do I take on Cedar Rapids? Look at the graph. Does Cedar Rapids ever fall in ROI? Or let me say it this way. Does the marginal cost of the last dollar spent on Cedar Rapids ever go above what I'm going to make off Cedar Rapids? Again, does the cost of the last dollar I spend on Cedar Rapids go above what I'm going to make on Cedar Rapids? No. I saw a couple of you shaking your head. Do you see that the last dollar I spend on Cedar Rapids is here on the marginal cost of capital? Cedar Rapids is a winner. Cedar Rapids never gets worse. Just pisses me off, you see. I am on a bad roll here. So 18, 17, 16. Yep. Actually, it looks to me like it does. You have to draw it, though. You have to draw it in carefully. That's what I was talking about before, is if you do these just freehand or like this, you won't see it. But it looks to me, at least on this, what I did here, that in this case, Cedar Rapids starts out making more than it costs. You see that? Cedar Rapids, the ROI looks better than the cost of the last dollar spent on it. But by the time I am finished with Cedar Rapids, it looks to me like here that my cost of capital has gotten worse than what the project will make. Now, again, though, you have to do this by hand, carefully, to make the actual judgment. And there was a quiz online. That's why this last one, I wasn't planning to do the whole thing anyway, because you've got to see it for yourself. It is very possible that Cedar Rapids, see how Cedar Rapids starts out? Its ROI is 16% and the cost of the capital is 15.46%. But by the time I'm finished spending money on Cedar Rapids, it looks, at least from here, like the project has ended up below the cost of the last dollar I spent. If any part of a project dips below the last dollar of the marginal cost of capital, you reject that project. Again, let me say that again. If any dollar you spend on a project is below the cost of the capital for that dollar, you reject right there and then. And then, of course, you reject all projects after that one, too. So in other words, and I'll draw something a little bit abstract here for you. Damn. I'll show it to you. Look, suppose that you had breakpoints that looked like this. Breakpoint one, breakpoint two, and you had your marginal cost of capital. This is your MCC. Now, suppose that your first project runs like this. Do you see that there's no dollar of that project that's going to cost as much as you make off it? You see the IOS here? I mean, the worst you're going to spend is this cost. You're going to get this return. So, yeah, this project, absolutely. Now let's look at the next one. What do you say? Yeah, this whole project, you always start from the last dollar you spent. Now we're starting to spend money on another project. This project all comes in gold. And now we got a little project that we're going to spend money on. Do we take it or not? Nope. And you might have, and I've heard this before, but it's just a few of the last dollars that were too expensive. Overall, the project looks good. Why are you going to turn it down just because a few of the last dollars were more expensive than the return? Here's the answer that you always give to that. You're thirsty. You're in the desert. And I walk up to you with a great big glass of delicious water The only problem is at the very bottom is a tiny, little, tiny speck of turd. Are you still going to drink the glass of water? No. That turd is your decision maker. Small as it is, that's why you say no if even a little bit of it. So finish this, get it on this quiz 6 on ReggieNet, and that's all I have for you today. I thank you.